This July, we celebrate the birth of our nation and remember the heroes who fought for our freedoms. But did you know there are Americans today who don't have the freedom of life and liberty? Every day, unborn babies' very lives are under attack. But because of preborn, we can rescue them.
I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Ultrasounds save lives. And when you save a life at a preborn network clinic, you often save a soul, as over 85,000 women have come to know Christ. To learn more about preborn's life-saving work, call #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner. My name is Abraham Hamilton III. I am the host of this program, joined by the Corner Contingent. Right across from me, my man, 100 grand, Mr. Bobby Rosa. And in the screening room, lighting up the dark from there, Mr. Marty Sparks, our perpetually recovering neighborhood woolaholic who leaps tall stacks of birch in a single bound. And in studio to my right, man, this is our last week with our summer intern. You heard him just now giving the news on the hour, Reed Ritter, Double R. We've enjoyed having him this summer. We look forward to seeing all that God does in him and through him from this point forward. So much is happening in the world, man. If you don't pay attention to this show, you might not know about it, but probably one of the biggest trade deals maybe in history was just executed over the weekend, and I don't know why there are not more people excited about it. Oh, yeah, I remember. I forgot.
The whole week.
We hate Donald Trump. That's why. Trump derangement syndrome. I mean, you have the trade deal with Japan, the previous trade deal of the weekend, and culminated by this one with the European Union, which we're going to get into later on in the program, which is I'm going to show you some video of the press conference President Trump did with the head of the European Union, Ursula von der Leyen, because if you watch it, I told Bobby, it looked like she just ate a big bag of prunes. She doesn't look too excited about it, but the American people should be happy campers, especially in the automotive industry and other industries. Did they say no zero tariffs for American autos in Europe? Is that what we'll get into it. We'll get into it momentarily. And on the home front, good news, contrasted with some concern, Planned Parenthood facilities are closing all over the country, including some of their most formerly, what do you want to call it? Murderous, the most murderous for-profit facilities are closing. And a part of their, you know, political appeal to try to lobby regressive legislators to oppose the big, beautiful bill said that, oh, you can't do this because you'll cause over 200 Planned Parenthood facilities to close.
Why are you crying?
I thought you had all of these other services. That's what I thought. Including, that's right, my sister Merle is pointing out, the largest murdering facility in the world, that was in Houston, Texas, 78,000 square feet. Planned Parenthood just announced that they're closing it. Yes. Yes, this one really strikes me. When I was prosecuting in Houston, Texas, in Harris County, I used to have to drive by this monstrosity on I-45. But that one is closing. Including the big one they have in Manhattan. Closing. While at the exact same time, you see Planned Murderhood reporting record levels of abortions. So how do you reconcile these things? Well, you have, they call it, this is crazy. They call it abortion tourism. Where you have people traveling across state lines. But with these facilities closing, and I'm going to get into this later, it shows that a culture of life is available to us. But we have to accompany policy advancement, legislative advancement, defunding efforts with appealing to the hearts and minds of our fellow citizens. So at this very moment, as you are making your transition from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs, I want to simply encourage you to do so with intentionality, recognizing that what goes on in your house, is far more important than what goes on in the White House. You and I are directly accountable and responsible for what transpires in and through our homes. As we pay attention to things that are happening nationally, even internationally, we must not allow those things to divert our attention away from living locally, starting first in our homes. To the Word of God we go. Matthew chapter 5 is where we're going to go today. And I was praying before coming on the air today, and I want to just offer a reminder from the scriptures. Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. This is a part of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, the longest recorded sermon of Jesus in scripture. And I want to remind us of something, because we talk a lot about being salt and light, and we should. That's an appropriate conversation. But I think we can miss a critical component of this, and the scriptures bear this out very potently, I would argue. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. And this is, excuse me, I had to sneeze. This is what the text says. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Now, I want to mention a couple of things. First of all, the you in verses 13 and 14, in Greek, it's plural. So this is a you that has the plurality in view, and when you consider the application of the verbiage, it applies to those who were physically present to hear Jesus deliver the Sermon on the Mount. But it also applies by extension to all disciples who would follow him, all right? It mentions the twain components being salt of the earth. This is an articulation that the hearers at the time would have keenly understood, that salt was a preservative agent, that salt preserved the integrity of proteins prior to the technological innovation of refrigeration. You often had people, they would preserve proteins either by smoking or by salting. Depending on where you were, you would employ those different methods. But you also have the reality that salt is also a flavoring additive that gives flavoring and seasoning to food. You know, sometimes some people are flavor averse, you know what I'm saying? And then you have the other component, the light duty. So you have both as kind of offense and defense. So salt is kind of the defensive aspect, the preservative agent. This is akin to Paul's articulation that the church is to be the pillar and ground of the truth, both the advancing mechanism, forwardly advancing, as well as maintaining the integrity of the gospel, as the Apostle Jude pointed out, all right? So you have the salt component. Then Jesus said, you are the light of the world. This is one of the earliest shows I did on the program. I didn't intend for it to become like a thing, like a catchphrase for the show, but it became that. This is where I said darkness is not an affirmative force. The affirmative force is actually light. In the beginning, God said, let there be light. Light invaded the darkness. It wasn't the opposite way around. But darkness, although it's not an affirmative force, it reoccupies the space that is vacated by the light. So when you see both the affirmative and the preservative duties, or the offense being light, the defense being salt, being preservative. Instead of, in many instances, instead of the body of Christ being salt and light, we become lightly salted. Y'all have heard me say that before. But too often, or very often, I would say, that we focus on the salt and light duty, but we forget the why behind it. All right? So we have the salt and light duty, the what's. We got those down pat in many instances. But don't forget the concluding remarks in this particular portion of the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus said. Why are we committed to being salt and light? Why do we have a passionate fervor as we engage? Why are we so willing and so eager to engage? Why should we be? It's right to be passionate. It's right to be zealous. It's right to be fervently engaged as advocates for the truth, lovers of the truth, proclaimers of the truth. But we can't forget the why. What is the why? Right at the end of verse 16. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. The why for the salt and light duty, brothers and sisters, is so that our Father in heaven would be glorified. So often, when we endeavor to engage, or we endeavor to contend, as again the Apostle Jude said, that we earnestly contend for the faith that was once and for all handed down to the saints, we should never lose sight of the why. Man, we're engaging as we are so that our Heavenly Father will be glorified. There are too many instances where you have people who might even have a proper understanding on the matter. They might see the matter appropriately, but their engagement is deplorable. It's appalling. We should not, as members of the family of God, try to employ worldly wicked means to communicate godly truth. Our Father's glory is at stake. To say it in a different way, the impetus for us is love. Love for our God first, which drives us to have love for our fellow man. And it is that eternal, biblically anchored, eternally seated love. Not this mamby-pamby romantic comedy trash that the world conflates that word L-O-V-E with, well, you should just passively embrace anything I say or do. No, that's not love. But we cannot allow ourselves to devolve in our efforts to contend. We devolve into being merely contentious in our efforts to communicate truth, that we're willing to be a reproach to the name of our Heavenly Father because of our cause. When we engage, our purpose is not merely to win arguments. Our purpose is to win brothers and sisters. Our purpose is eternal. That eternal purpose has temporal impact and import, absolutely. But our purpose is eternal. The glory of our Father, the glory of our Father is why we are salt and light. And then I want you to notice the other thing it says there. So that others may see your good works. Guys, our display matters. Our display matters. The way we comport ourselves matters. The word choices we employ matters. It makes a difference. Because again, our objective is not merely to win arguments. It's to win brothers and sisters, which will certainly include arguments. I have lots of arguments with people. I'm sure you're surprised. They're like, no, Abe, really? Yeah, you know. I've been known to engage a bit. But I prayerfully try to remember why am I engaging? Not merely to win an argument. Not to try to, you know, I'm gonna outwit them in this moment. Man, what would it profit a man to gain the world and lose his soul? What would it be my benefit that I sure told him off and then he knocks the bottom out of hell? I wouldn't be happy about that. That's a grieving experience. You know, Jesus calls his people to love their enemies. to love our enemies. The glory of our Father is the reason why we engage in salt and light duty, is what I'm saying. And we cannot afford to lose sight of that. In the course of contending for the faith, we have to resist the temptation to become contentious. Because it's not about, you know, our intellectual capacity and our articulation gymnastics that we can employ. And what matters is that eternity hangs in the balance. What matters downstream from that is that we have to make choices in time that will impact what society becomes. But we must never lose sight of the fact that, man, our Father's glory is our reason for engaging. And so we should not seek to accomplish a godly result but using a sinful mechanism. Those things do not comport. God is concerned about the eternal matters, and the temporal are downstream from that.
A Discipleship Minute with Joseph Parker.
Love always gives, and we're all called to a lifestyle of love. One of, if not the most loving things you and I can do is share the gospel with a world that desperately needs to hear it. So one of the ways whereby we live a life of love is living a life and a lifestyle of sharing the gospel as we go. So a part of walking in love, walking in the wisdom and the power of love, is knowing that yes, if you're a believer, then it's your responsibility to be a bright and bold witness for the Lord Jesus Christ. Sharing the gospel as the Holy Spirit directs us, sharing the gospel because that helps address the biggest need of the world. Every human being's greatest need is the need to know Jesus Christ. So one of the ways whereby we live a life of love is living a life and a lifestyle of sharing the gospel as we go.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. So I alluded to this in the opening segment, but Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast, obviously a subset of Planned Parenthood, announced that it's closing two of its largest facilities. One was Planned Parenthood's physically largest facility and the largest baby murder mill in the world, 78,000 square feet. They announced that they are closing it. Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast, this regional entity, runs six clinics in the Houston area. With these two closing, the remainders will be shuttled from the national organization to a Texas affiliate. This follows the announcement, as I mentioned as well, that Planned Parenthood's Manhattan, New York facility is closing as well. They're trying to sell it. And I pulled this, and I'm about to share with you from Planned Parenthood's own website. They said, with the defunding from Medicaid, which was, by the way, just affirmed, but in a different way. But with the defunding from Medicaid through the One Big Beautiful Bill, Planned Parenthood is looking at closing potentially 200 facilities across the country. 24 states. 200 facilities across 24 states in the country. You also had the Supreme Court decision from the Medina versus Planned Parenthood South Atlantic that was just decided last month that said, oh, no, states can defund Planned Parenthood from Medicaid. So you have these things working at both ends. And I know there was a case today where you have a district court judge not wanting to necessarily follow the law. So this is great news. For those who believe in the sanctity of human life, it's great news for our country, even if you don't believe in the sanctity of human life, that we can get the shedding of innocent blood reduced, minimized, and by God's grace, ultimately eradicated. And I am rejoicing at this news, while at the same time, I'm also sober-minded, because this is not the conclusion of the war on this front. This is a battle. While this is true, at the exact same time, for example, the most recent statistics, Planned Parenthood showed an increase in the number of children that they'd murdered. In the most recent statistics, 402,230 unborn babies were murdered from 2022 to 2023, which was up from the 392,715 the year prior. So how do we reconcile these two things? Well, one of them is the fact of, like I said earlier, this whole so-called abortion tourism, where it is unconscionable. And it's amazing that we understand this in the criminal law context. Or you traveling across state lines for the purposes of murder? But when it comes to unborn children, we become conveniently ignorant. I'll never forget, and I did a show on this, when She or Shall Never Be President's daughter was rejoicing over the legally shielded ability to murder one's children. And she said, yeah, and look at the economic impact. And it, because I happen to have practiced law and prosecuted capital murder and homicides and things of that nature, I said, wait a minute. So the legal definition, a state legal definition for a capital murder, is a murder for pecuniary benefit. So you eliminate a person's life for the profit that you seek for doing so. That's called murder for hire. So I'm saying nobody has a problem with this. So you think it's cool? You think it's sweet to say, hey, look at all these babies we murdered. Hey, but glad we did. Look at all the money we made as a result. Like, wow. And you have the same thing happening now where so your state, you don't have a murder mill in your state, so you're going to take this show on the road? And you got people willing to profit from that? The point I want to make from this, guys, is that a culture of life is possible. There are things happening on the legislative front for which I am grateful. Thank God that the horrendous stain on our nation that was the January 22nd, 1973 decision, Roe versus Wade, and its attendant carnage in Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992, that they have been forever overturned. But there's still work to be done. And it's going to require, again, thankful for things that are happening on the policy front. I'm thankful for legislation. I'm thankful for the Supreme Court action in Dobbs. But we cannot relent from praying and engaging our fellow citizens. You know, there are young people, and I'm sad to say, you know, I'm on a board for a youth organization in my hometown in the greater New Orleans area. And you have scores of young people. They have no value for marriage. In fact, what do you mean get married? Nah, I don't want to get married. I don't know anybody around me who's married. There are scores of young people in our society who say things like that. Oh, nobody around me is married. Why would I got to be married? Why would I need to be married? And I'm going to cover a story later that just in 2024, the statistics just came out that the U.S. fertility rate has declined to its lowest ever in history. Mm-hmm. To where our fertility rate as a nation is careening below replacement. So what I'm saying is, man, we need people on the ground. We need people that are the hands and feet of Jesus. We need crisis resource centers. We need churches to support our crisis pregnancy resource centers. You guys know that the transition has happened in our country to where babies are no longer being murdered as at the rates that they were previously surgically, but you have these chemical baby murders taking place with the mifepristone and misoprostol, these pills that are being used, and even to date that are being sold across state lines in violation of state law, federal law, I would add. But in addition to the things happening at the policy front, we need to see people, hands and feet, flesh and blood. You know, arm yourself with the data, arm yourself with the research. Live action, the ministry that Lila Rhodes heads up has done an amazing job with these videos. You'll be surprised that many people have heard the concept of abortion only in a clinical and a political discourse. They have not seen what a DNC actually does. They have not witnessed what happens when you pour the chemicals inside the moms, when you physically burn the child. They haven't seen these ultrasounds and sonograms where they're literally, the babies are running from the murderous so-called doctor's forceps. And I say so-called not because they don't have the expertise in the medical studies, but the Hippocratic Oath says first do no harm. I don't understand how you could be a doctor and yet you profit from intentionally terminating the life of an unborn child. That's harm, man. That's harm. And so when I see these things that are happening, the defunding that's happening, the murder mills that are shutting down because they can no longer afford to operate as they have been, I'm encouraged by that. But at the exact same time, it's no time to be doing, you know, the shoeless Joe Johnson happy dance and trying to spike the ball. And in addition to appealing, having a culture where human life is valued, man, the souls of these people hang in the balance, man. You can tell me what you want. People try to tell me different things. Miss me with all that talk. I'm from the hood. You can't tell me. You know, I had a guy one time to tell me, well, the child will be born in these horrendous circumstances. I'm saying, well, geez, you would rather a child to be dead than to be poor? That's the argument you want to make? You would rather you kill the baby than for the baby to have to grow through some struggles and some difficulties. You know, I'm grateful that my parents didn't think like that. I'm from the block. I know what it's like when food stamps were real paper. And you had the big faces on them. I know what that's like. Don't tell me that's better. It's better for a child to be killed. That's not better. So my purpose in saying that is to encourage vigilance, man. If you're in the stage of life, some of you listening to me, you're at the stage of life where you're retired. You know, you can spend time. You can volunteer at your local pregnancy resource center. You can spend that time there. Some of you might be in churches, but we don't have those. You might be the one that need to start one, you know, to start one right in your community. You know, accumulate goods and things. There's so many different things available that are available. Some places give grants to pregnancy resource centers so they can not only help encourage moms to have the babies, but to help with tangible clothes and diapers and foods and things for the first several years of the child's lives. Of the children's lives. We can establish a culture of life if we're willing to. That's what I'm saying. Now, I know there are powerful forces, the liars in Hollywood, I know that. The liars in media, I know that. The deceived, you know, celebrities, and we kind of have this idol-worshipping, celebrity-worshipping culture. But guess what? None of those things are bigger than the Lord, man. None of those things. So don't allow those big kind of broad considerations to intimidate you away from responding the way that God would have you respond. Let's be about our Father's business, man. Then you have this, talking about foolishness du jour. A United States District Court judge in Boston, her name is Indira Talwani. Bobby, why are you looking like that? Why the facial expression? Judge Talwani, what's wrong, Bobby?
You know something like a 2 weeks coming.
Judge Talwani, Judge Indira Talwani. She decided that the efforts to defund Planned Parenthood through and excluding them specifically from the Medicaid reimbursements is unlawful. Now, she's wrong, and I expect her to be reversed. But this underscores what I'm saying, the necessity of continuing to be vigilant. And it's remarkable that, you know, Judge Talwani, you hear all of these, Donald Trump is going to be a tyrant. He's going to be a dictator. It's like, you have judges like this that clearly just disregard legal precedent, just disregard what the lawful status is. Congress authorized Medicaid payments in the first place. You mean to tell me Congress can't change that through the one big, beautiful bill? And if you're wondering, here's my PSA. And if you wonder why schools have stopped teaching civics, this is why.
Cole.
Uh-huh.
You stupid.
And in this instance, ignorant. You know, because there's a difference between stupidity and ignorance. Ignorance is just don't know. A lot of people just don't know. I would say Judge Talwani falls in another category, which shall remain unspoken at this moment. But it's just remarkable. So literally June 26, 2025, the United States Supreme Court, which, you know, last time I checked, you have the district court down here. Am I right about it, Reed Ritter? And the U.S. Supreme Court is up here. And Supreme Court precedent is binding upon lower district courts. Isn't that interesting, Mr. Rosa? And the U.S. Supreme Court just ruled in Medina versus Planned Parenthood versus South Atlantic that states, now, of course, I know the difference between state government and federal government, but go with me for a moment here, that the U.S. Supreme Court just ruled, hey, you know what? States can decide whether or not they want to allow, you know, entities that murder babies to receive taxpayer money in the form of reimbursements for their services, you see. The state of South Carolina, in this instance, by application, every state in the union has the lawful authority to say that, hey, if your organization kills babies, then we don't want our taxpayers' dollars going to you. So every state in the country can do it. How do you think that would affect the federal government's via its Congress's ability to do it? It's almost as if Judge Talwani completely is ignorant of the fact that the One Big Beautiful Bill passed both houses of Congress and was signed by the president. Almost. Except that I don't think Judge Talwani is unaware that the One Big Beautiful Bill was signed into law. I just think Judge Talwani is very similar to the Wisconsin state judge Hannah Dugan. Remember her? Judge Dugan had this thing about her, you know, she never met an illegal alien she didn't like. And she decided to put her entire career as a judge on the line so that an illegal alien could escape ICE detention. And contrary to many people who protest the phrase, there is a thing called activist judges. They're not content with calling balls and strike like an umpire. They want to switch jerseys and get in the batter's box. And hey, bada, swing, and a miss. So I expect Judge Talwani's case will be reversed. If it's not reversed at the appellate circuit court level, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to say, ma'am, judge, and if the circuit court is wrong, circuit court, we've already decided on this issue in this manner. Now, if you want to try to split hairs and say, well, the federal government, you see, because it's federal, it's different than the state government, to which the court is going to ultimately say, but it's Congress. The same Congress that set the precedent for Medicaid reimbursement is the same one who's now said, we don't want baby murderers getting taxpayer dollars. And oh, by the way, the policymakers recognize that the majority of the American populace, regardless of political persuasion, feels the same way. So if the policymakers have made that decision and Congress is the branch that makes the law, you, Judge Talwani, don't get the opportunity to intrude upon the province of the separation of powers. You have been separated from this power to determine how Congress allows taxpayer money to be allocated. And it's just foolishness, man. It's just utter foolishness. But it underscores the necessity of continued vigilance on this front. We can have a culture of life. We simply must refuse to become weary in well-doing. We must press forward.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. I mentioned this in the very first segment. I'm going to dig into it a little bit more. But over the weekend, President Trump announced, and not alone, he announced in a press conference sitting alongside Ursula von der Leyen, who is the head of the European Union. And they had a joint press conference to announce, and I'm sorry, y'all, this is dating myself. Whenever I hear Ursula, I think Ariel. What's the name of the movie where she was the mermaid in the Disney movie? Little Mermaid. Little Mermaid. I mean, man, oof. Ooh, what's going on up top up here? The Little Mermaid. You know, Ursula. And y'all look at it and conclude for yourselves. But it looks to me like Ursula had consumed about a dozen prunes before going into this press conference. She doesn't look too excited as she sits next to President Trump. Listen to and watch clip number two as President Trump, next to Ursula von der Leyen, announced the trade deal that they both just signed. Clip number two, go.
It's the deal. It's a good deal for everybody, I believe. And it's, I think you were saying, this is probably the biggest deal ever reached in any capacity, trade or beyond trade.
It is.
It's a giant deal with lots of countries. Because, as you know, Ursula represents a lot of countries, not one country. It's not easy for you. That's because a lot of very different countries, great countries, but some are strong with cars, some are strong with agriculture, some are strong with both, right? You have a lot of different factors. So we're going to do the following. The European Union is going to agree to purchase from the United States $750 billion worth of energy. $750 billion worth of energy. They are going to agree to invest into the United States $600 billion more than they're investing already. So they're investing a large amount of money. You know what that amount of money is. It's very substantial, but they're going to invest an additional $600 billion. They're agreeing to open up their countries to trade at zero tariff. So that's a very big factor. Opening up their countries, all of the countries will be opened up to trade with the United States at zero tariff. And they're agreeing to purchase a vast amount of military equipment. We don't know what that number is, but it's the good news is we make the best military equipment in the world, so sort of you have to do that, I mean, until somebody tops us, which is not going to happen. We're way ahead of every other country in terms of the quality of the military equipment. You saw that recently in Iran, and you see that, unfortunately, you see that often for all the wrong reasons, right?
So I'm sure the radio audience saw it. Some of the people on the live stream were saying there was no sound. But I'll walk through. Sorry about that, guys. What President Trump was announcing, and even if you couldn't hear the video, you could see Ursula von der Leyen. Y'all tell me, did she look like she was rejoicing to be present? Or did she look like she had a few prunes? I mean, I'm sorry. When I saw, I was like, ooh, Ursula looks not too excited. Well, what they announced together is that the European Union, and there are 27 member countries of the EU, the European Union will purchase $750 billion worth of energy. But here's the key. Over the next 3 years, $750 billion over the next 3 years. You know, I'm not a mathematician, but I can carry the one every now and again. So you're talking about $250 billion a year for the next 3 years. Then an investment of $600 billion in the U.S. in addition to what they're already investing. So not continuing existing investments, but an additional $600 billion above what they're already investing in the United States of America. And this is when it gets even more interesting. Opening the European Union's member countries to tariff-free American exports, including American automobiles. Guys, this has never happened. To where American-made automobiles will be able to be sold in the European Union member nations with zero tariffs. In addition to that, the European Union agrees to purchase And President Trump said a vast amount of American military equipment, the value of that purchase has not yet been stated. But if you recall, we just sold a bunch of military equipment to NATO. And President Trump said, hey, you know, if NATO wants to sell it to Ukraine, then, you know, let them go ahead with it. Let them go on with it. And in addition to that, in return, all of those things are what's coming into the U.S. In return, the U.S. will impose a 15% import tariff on most European goods, which is half of what it would have been if they didn't reach a deal by August 1st. And specifically as it applies to European automotive exports, the current tariff on European automobiles imported into the United States of America is 27.5%. So in exchange for all of those things, the U.S. is going to get $750 billion of energy purchases over 3 years, an additional $600 billion in U.S. investment, opening EU member nations to tariff-free American exports. The European Union will enjoy a reduction of the current tariff rate from 27.5% to 15% on European automobiles that are sold in America. And that's it, y'all. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That is a big deal. That is a big deal. So that is what they announced. I think there's a legitimate question as to, you know, why would the U.S. want to sell our military equipment to other nations? And obviously, I think, you know, I'm not the president, but let's just say hypothetically, we have this new missile system. Let's just call it Missile System 2.0. What should be sold is probably not the 2.0s, if y'all get my drift. It's one of the ways we can ensure military superiority is the stuff, if we're selling stuff, it's the old models. Y'all get what I'm saying? All right. Which I know. And Bobby said that's the way we have been doing it, which is what we anticipate. Now, again, I'm not president, so I don't know what particular items I haven't gone through with the barcodes. I haven't scanned the barcodes and seen what is going on. Guys, that's kind of a big deal. That's a big deal. The European Union has a $20 trillion economy. Now, I clearly have disagreements with a lot of the things they do over there. Like, for example, in the UK, they're considering under Keir Starmer, this is so sad. They can't protect their streets, but they're going to develop a new, you know, police to scour the internet, specifically to look for commentary on the internet in England that is anti-immigrant. Like, y'all don't have anything better to do than that? And they say, I can hear their accents. We can do this and preserve our free speech. No, you can't. But that's a big deal. That is a big deal. This EU trade deal. Now, from what I understand of the process with the European Union, the 27 other member states have opportunity to weigh in. Some of the other, like the head of Italy and other nations, are already saying that they are all for the deal. Many of them were afraid of the August 1st deadline. And this just underscores what we know to be true. And this is not a matter of, you know, chest pounding or just, you know, American braggadocio. But the truth is the world understands that the United States of America is the most robust consumer market in the world. In the world. So it reaffirms the reality that when you hold the big stick, so to speak, in negotiating, you don't have to go hat in hand around the world bowing to everybody else, because everybody else in the world wants what you have. That's what I'm saying. And so you have this. Yes, you have the tariff deadline that was Friday, with the European Union. And it seems that Ursula and her prunes, they're not used to having an American president that'll say, well, hey, listen, this is what it is. If we don't get a deal by Friday, then you guys are going to have a harder time selling your European stuff in our country. Y'all going to pay more for it. And it just, to me, it provokes the question, why haven't other presidents done that? Why haven't other leaders done that? You know, this is a statement, and I know it's from a Trump administration official, but is this a truthful statement? Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick says, quote, the European Union is going to open its $20 trillion market and completely accept our auto and industrial standards for the first time ever, end quote. Is that a true statement? They're going to open their markets and completely accept our auto and industrial standards for the first time ever. If that is a true statement, why haven't other people done this? And the sad reality is that, man, we've had, frankly, too many globalists in positions of influence and authority in our nation. That's just the bottom line. Until the point that I was referring to earlier, you know, England, they have their problems. They are creating an elite team of police officers to monitor social media for anti-migrant sentiment. Detectives will be drawn from forces across the country to take part of a new investigations unit with the aim of, quote, maximizing social media intelligence, end quote. That's just, I guess they didn't hear when J.D. Vance gave that speech in Munich not too long ago when, you know, the UK, and you got to remember, they were a part of the European Union. Then you had Brexit that they had to vote how many times for it to take root? Three times. Recount. Brexit recount. But then they have Keir Starmer in Parliament. And functioning, I should say, in Parliament. And then you have these things happening. On the trade deal front, as I mentioned it again, I think it's great for the United States of America. I'm thinking about how it will influence and benefit the American workers. But you know what? I can't help but think, why haven't we done this before? Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Is it that we just had so many people who are just so self-focused and self-interested that they were lining their own pockets? I mean, it's not lost on me that, you know, do a little research. George W. Bush had a little bit of money. Well, go back to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton didn't have a whole lot of money. He becomes president. Ta-da! Wealthy. George W. Bush's family is already relatively wealthy, but when he left office, he was more wealthy. Barack Hussein Obama didn't have two nickels rubbed together before he became president, but he leaves office wealthy. Donald Trump becomes president. He loses money. The only one in the most recent presidents who lost money as a result of being president, who voluntarily donated his presidential salary, never took a penny from the salary that he rightfully earned as the president, never took a penny. And even now is not taking his salary. It kind of makes you wonder, you know? Yet the whole media establishment, they don't have hardly anything to say now negative about any of those other people except for Donald Trump. Ain't that interesting? Couldn't stand George W. Bush while he's in office, but now he's out of office. They love him. I mean, all the he fist bumps with Michelle Obama. I mean, they just love him. I love him. You know, couldn't stand Mitt Romney until he lost the presidency. Now they just love him. Trump's the only one of the recent presidents who lost money following his time in the Oval Office. Isn't that interesting?
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.